Hi, friends. It's me, Duncan, and you're listening to the Doug Guttrussell Family Hour podcast, recorded in the Guff, a.k.a. the Well of Souls, or the Columbarium, as they call it up here. Here's a song about the CIA.
I wanna be in the CIA. I wanna know everything, want to control everything. I wanna go to the Bohemian Grove, wanna eat chicken wings with a secret king. I wanna be in the Skull and Bones, wanna be in the room when they activate my clone. I wanna be a chosen one, flying in a spaceship while I make a lizard come. I wanna be in the CIA.
That's I Want to Be in the CIA, and that was released by the CIA. I'm really loving all the music that they've been putting out lately. They really have hit a stride. I didn't like the prog rock bullshit they were putting out in 2019, but wow. It's like they've really found themselves, and I hope that they see Lord. Friends, we have a spectacular podcast for you today. Daedalus is here on the DTFH. But first this. ExpressVPN. A big thank you to ExpressVPN for supporting this episode of the DTFH. If you feel like humping the great digital demon that is the internet, why not protect yourself? If anybody found out that I love looking at foot fetish style dominatrix porn, preferably German porn on the internet, my career would be over. And so I use ExpressVPN. When you use ExpressVPN, your internet connection is rerouted through a secure encrypted server so you can surf the web anonymously without anyone looking over your shoulder. Look, I know many of you probably think that incognito mode keeps you safe from the dark prying eyes of literally millions of various agencies, COPPLs, and chaos agents, but you're wrong. Even when you use incognito mode, your internet provider like Comcast or AT&T can see every single website you visit. If you live on campus or use a shared Wi-Fi, your network admin can too. To be honest, that's kind of scary. Without ExpressVPN, you're giving people a free license to peek over your shoulder as you look at whatever freaky stuff you're looking at. Kiss your neck, comb your hair while you pleasure yourself. Don't do that. If you do that, you might get spanked. Protect your privacy today and get 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Visit expressvpn.com/Duncan. That's expressvpn.com/Duncan for 3 months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/Duncan to learn more. It's so wonderful to have a kid in preschool because sometimes they make stuff for you and they bring it home. And I just wanted to read something that Forrest wrote in preschool. Dear Daddy, I sure hope that eventually human beings realize that there's no such thing as artificial intelligence. There's only intelligence. And that the reason that so many humans are currently scared about the emerging of artificial intelligence, he finger painted this, it's hard to read all of it. Emergence of artificial intelligence is that they are projecting their own experience with what they think of as intelligence upon this brand new life form that is growing from the eternal womb of the collective. I hope that people begin to understand, so sweet. I hope that people begin to understand that intelligence is one of the qualities of the divine consciousness and therefore is fundamentally good, and that the reason humans feel nervous when it comes to intelligence is they associate colonialism and dominator culture with intelligence, when in fact these two things that have caused so much suffering and sorrow in the world are more of a result of delusion, aka the self-identified human ego obscuring the radiant light of the divine intelligence that shines eternally from the soul. I really just want people to enjoy their lives and look forward to the future, which is going to be so wonderful and so beautiful that there will be galactic visitors coming to bask in the novelty. I love trucks, and I just want more trucks. Love, Forrest. Isn't he so cute? I love him so much. You know, I'm not afraid of artificial intelligence, especially after meeting today's guest, who was introduced to me via the AI of Spotify. Before I forget, loves, if you want commercial-free episodes of the DTFH, head over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. We gather generally 3 times a week for a family gathering, a book club, and a guided, well, not guided, it's just a meditation called Journey into Boredom. But you can join us by going to patreon.com/DTFH. Also, you're going to get commercial-free episodes of this podcast, and you will get access to many interviews before I release them. That's patreon.com/DTFH. Today's guest is the artist in residence at SETI, that search for extraterrestrial intelligence. I will let them explain what that is during our awesome conversation. They also have a really great Patreon. If you're interested in making music, learning more about making music, head over to patreon.com/datalessmusic, and they also teach at Berkeley. They're brilliant. They make the coolest music that I've heard in a very long time, and now they're here with us. Everybody, please welcome to the DTFH, Daedalus. Welcome to the DTFH, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I must admit that I was taken off guard. I am not a spiritual leader. I am not a thought provoker. I just do my little humble bit of ditty, and I love that can kind of reach out sometimes, just every once in a while, and do that magic thing.
Oh, that's so interesting in the sense. Well, I mean, I think the first of all, the podcast, I do love interviewing spiritual leaders, thought leaders, but I think it's curious that you would think somehow you're not in that category, in the sense that since the algorithm blessed me with your music, the great machine, I must have done the right invocation in my dreams. And suddenly it's like, oh, if you like that, you're going to like this. And I'm listening and thinking, my God, whoever this is, their mind, what kind of mind is producing this? What is making this? And then I thought, honestly, it's funny you start off by being humble, because I thought, well, this guy definitely is in a secret society. Has to be. You can't make this kind of music unless you're part of some mystical tradition. So where does it come from then for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's funny you mentioned that. Well, two things. It's funny you mention that, because in part, I have a deep, engrossing, overwhelming amount of mysticism, partially just because of the effect of sound itself. Like, I have been under its spell forever and trying to understand that for myself and for others. Like, I have said this before, but I will say it again. You play one good show as a musician and it ruins you. You will be in pursuit of that feeling, that sensation, that spirit forever. And so I've tried to unlock it both on stages and in records, but also away from all that, like trying to really get to the bottom of why phenomena and sound and then it's all of its spiritual manifestations resonate with me so much. And then, you know, everyone else has some song or sound or artist that turns that key for them. And on the other side, just one brief mention, I use they them pronouns. It's just something for myself. And so
Gotcha.
Yeah. Just throwing it out there. And it's,
yes,
it's been a trip, especially
forgive me if I already messed that one up, because I knew that. And I'm sorry if my habit of referring to people manifested somewhere earlier.
I say dude so much. I'm very West Coast. I'm very LA. And so given just even half a chance, you will hear an outgrowth of awesomes and dudes aplenty.
I do mans. And I'm like, I don't mean man, but it just is like some placeholder or something. Yeah. But this thing you're talking about, I saw on YouTube one of your shows, and I think you tweeted it like a pre-pandemic show, and we're all missing that so much. But I was watching you perform, and just from just the video, feeling what that must have been like to be in the room. But I wonder if you could help me understand as much as you understand what that particular energy is.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people resonate immediately with the fact that music is like this great intonator of emotional energy. Like you can really communicate very complicated, like not just emotions, but ideas. If you ever listen to the uncomfortableness of jazz, like if the listeners out there have heard like hard bop, like the beboppiest of bops, and like the kind of overwhelming weird kind of tensions, like some people just get like uncomfortable immediately with this, like the jazz. And part of yes. that is that there's like these huge large volumes of information that are coming at them, and it's like undeniable how much information there is there, how many notes and how the interaction between these players are all forming this lattice. But to me, even more so than the emotions, is that musicians are time workers. And I don't mean this in the psycho-spiritual way. I mean, like, very directly, you are playing, you are, like, resonating with someone's past, and you are also speaking to their future in a way that comes together in a sound moment that is undeniable. Like, you know, a lot of people can regress so completely to their, like, teenage years with a single song. You are, like, immediately yes. transported back to the exact time, place, and who is to say that isn't actually happening to that degree? And now sure, there's chemicals unlocking in the brain, and there's like those are destroying themselves and remaking themselves, and like the accuracy is far from assured, but that and that brief flash of melody, you are there, you are with it.
And wow.
And so when you're playing a show, to me, I love leaning into the kind of shared zeitgeist of like, okay, you might know this song and I'm gonna try to pervert it or twist it this way or that way. But on top of that, it's just the loudness, the undeniable aspect of being like, do you know what entrainment is? It's like this very human sure. function, right? So when we can get entrained, it's like we can sync our nervous system, we can sync our breath, we can do all this like physiological stuff that is you couldn't ask someone to think about it consciously and do so. You only can entreat them with a sound and like pull them one direction. And then a warm room, this is another theory too that I love so much, the warm room. Like comedians talk about it all the time. But you yeah. get into that space where like anything's possible, like the veil is like thin and like,
yes.
and it's just the warmth. And it's like such a, and not wow. the greatest term for it, but it's so like when you're feeling it, it's just like, oh, it's electric. It's magical.
Bhav, there's a term in, I don't know, have you heard of the term BHAV, Bhav?
Mm.
That's another term for it. It's like, you know, when it usually gets used for mystical spiritual situations, but certainly that is a mystical spiritual situation. It's that sense of being very close, if not there with something. I think maybe this is why the best shows give me a sense of like, wow, I could definitely imagine an alien mm-hmm. could be here or be looking in at this, or this is the alien. But I want to start, if we could, at the first thing you said, which is the temporal aspect to it, and in particular the idea of time travel, which, you know, and I know on one level we're talking about, if you want to reduce it to the most boring place, we could say music is doing for your brain what a farmer does to a cow. It's milking dopamine, serotonin mm-hmm. in a certain way, and it's getting you high. Great. So that's a different podcast, but let's jump to the next level of it, which to me, I do think that it's, and especially these days with what they're discovering with quantum physics, mm-hmm. the implication of parallel timelines completely creates the possibility of this form of time travel right. in the sense that the music becomes a bridge to a parallel timeline that's happening simultaneously to this one, but is a few years earlier than this one. And in those two moments, your past you and you are holding hands mm-hmm. via the music.
Yeah.
And that's why when you listen to it when you were for the first time, we're like, I really like this. Maybe it was because you were touching yourself in the future. And do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, phonons, right? Phonons are the most basic unit of vibrational energy. It's like photons, but the sound version, basically, of that. And so phonons only exist in matter. They, you know, you would imagine that photons are like this wild, free thing across the universe, whereas phonons only agree in the lattice work of basically... of atomic, this is like at least how they're understood, but as it's been detected and kind of gone drilled down on, let's say, through this modern science machine, we're detecting more and more that they operate on a quantum level, of course, just like photons do. There's like this trick of them. And so if you're talking about, of course, like this micro phenomenon, but then, you know, across the universe, that micro phenomenon becomes overwhelming and macro and effective. And so why not think that we're playing in the same spaces. Now, I'm not one of the people that ascribes to certain frequencies, have certain feelings. Famously, Eric Satie believed that certain notes had certain emotions attached to them. I think he was called a fenestrician or something. And he had an early version of a dB meter, like the most basic, like loud or soft, like as like almost like a ticker, like a stock exchange meter thing. Yes. And he would like look at like a C, like a middle C, and be like, I don't like this note. It's angry. Like, This is
what,
and so you'll see that
you mean. Wait, I'm sorry. He would like a middle, so he would hear a middle C,
just a note, and just a note.
But he would think in this moment it's angry, or it's transient, like a quality of it is angry, or this particular note is a living, like an angry bird that flew in.
I can't speak to it in total, and every time I've tried to do research on the matter, it's just people basically shout them down as quackery. But I've learned over time that what is often just disregarded, but by those who touch on a certain kind of greatness, there's a lot of truth to it.
Yeah. Right?
There's just, I'm not saying that you know, everything Eric Satie did was touched by genius. And actually even the concept of musicians being genius or being special or different is troublesome, right? We could go into that in a second. The fact that society builds these people up or tends to want to give them special powers just because they play with special powers. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, absolutely.
And I think oftentimes the people who wield it the best know the least about it. And maybe that's like a function. Maybe that's built in.
It's a form of cruelty to call someone a genius, isn't it? Sometimes it's really putting a lot of weight on them because now they've got to be a genius in front of you. There's some sense of a continuum of genius where like every moment they're going to be, I know what you mean, or the stereotype of the genius, which is also weirdly somehow a person who's like challenged in some way or like has a personality disorder, all of that. It's
a lot of musicians really, do though. Let's just be fair. There is something about touching madness in the Cthulhu sense. You look at it a little too much and you're going to be shattered slightly.
Yes.
But that's neither here nor there.
But that actually is here because it brings me to the next thing I wanted to ask you. Relating to this possibility of music transcending time and space, if music is doing that, then in the process of creation, if when you're listening to music, you're connecting to your past and your future, then in the process of creation, what are you connecting to? Where is the music flowing from into you?
Yeah, and the way it's been presented to me and the way I resonate with it best is that when you are fully in the flow of it, when you're fully in the moment, you are abdicating your role as composer or creator, and you are simply a vessel for something else. Now, what that else is really just depends on you as an artist, what that particular medium, that channel, that decides to touch down as. For me, I often find that when that like true celerity, like the quickness of it comes, I am not totally present. I am especially not an arbiter of good or bad. It is just, there is like a kind of a rightness that seems to undo a lot of wrongs. And I feel like I'm putting my finger in like the dam of entropy, so to speak. Like I am just holding up against this overwhelming feeling of like disintegration. And it can feel really empowering, but it also feels very precarious. It's like, you know, you talk about it too much, you tease it too much, and the bread falls and the thing dies and it becomes too cajoled. So I feel like a lot of the spiritualism that I felt initially regarding music was just that thing of like, don't shake the baby, like don't ruin the thing, don't even look at it too much because it may disappear for you. But then you do it again and again, and you're like, well, no, there's something else here. Like, I may not be totally in control of it. I may not decide especially what's successful or bad. Now that's totally different metrics, right? Like success and poor, you know, what works and what flies and fails really depends on like much larger societal things. But just that self-satisfaction, that knowledge that when something is right and you've righted something in the universe, right, you've curved it slightly and it has a little bit of English or whatever that phrase is, and it kind of goes in a direction you wouldn't have expected. And it's, you know, there's only in the traditional Western scale, there's only 12 notes available to us, and they have octaves and they have overtones and they have timbre, but it's really this limited set. And so you're like, well, that's a finite system, there's only so many variations. But then you find something different in it, you pluck it from the bottom of the ocean, something else. And it really feels like that thing of making Gollum, right? You intone into existence something has never been, and it's only that fleeting moment it's in front of you, and sometimes you're able to kind of ask it to stick around a little bit longer.
Can you talk a little bit, you use the term cajole. Mm-hmm. I really love that. Can you talk about that a little bit more, that thing when you're in the making something and suddenly you realize you're, well, you know, I don't know.
No,
oftentimes,
literally, when you're making music, it's about exciting atoms. You are pushing air. And so cajoling really does feel like the kind of verb for it, because you are asking the air to be excited in a different way around you. You're sometimes it is the thing of stressing the space, and sometimes it's really relaxing the space, but it's always about a release. And it how do you say this? There's something about warming up, you know, like the friction of the thing, I guess. So this is where the mysticism comes back. I've done a few records that invoke the mystic, and maybe you haven't gotten there in your own like lookings and learnings, but like the Order of the Golden Dawn, like
from that is my number one jam.
Awesome.
It's what I've been listening to that every day on the way to the studio. Wow. It contemplating what it means and why you, what the album cover means.
Yeah.
And yes. So please continue.
So yeah, the Order of the Golden Dawn was a practical magical organization from 1875 that was started by some of the same people who invented the modern tarot. And it's interesting, and they're notable in part because they pulled their mysticism not from the Judeo-Christian, or even where the Judeo-Christian thing was going, in terms of like the, you know, they were starting to look towards these like illusionary figures in Tibet and maybe some of the Kemetic, the kind of Egyptian tradition of things.
Yes.
But equally, and this is the way that the world gets really tough. So like the Order of the Golden Dawn, this ancient thing, blah, blah, blah. But then also there's the Golden Dawn in Greece that's like a fascist political organization. And for a period of time, I would like try to look up more information about this, you know, like on the internet, which is just useless in some ways. But
yeah.
And I kept coming across this fascist organization. Like, what have I done? Like, I didn't mean to invoke that. Like, that was not part of this ritual. And yet this is the modern moment. You are like... everything at once. The Anthropocene is like the private made public, and you know, what are we to do but like just try to put out like so here's the song that has, you know, like it has plenty of lyrical mentioning about the Order of the Golden Dawn. I'm trying to really invoke that thing, and it fits in the framework of the larger record, and hopefully pushes forward this idea of gold, right? Like the alchemical process, which is such a musical process, not with philosopher's stones, but with this like traditional melody, these kind of tools that we have in terms of music theory, which is useless and useful in its own way. But, and then at the same time, like just trying to get away from the practical modern application. That's like, why do these nitwits have to like go squat on my beautiful, beautiful crown of history?
Well, I think, you know, in the same way that they have a tendency of nabbing and corrupting all the most beautiful symbols. They took the swastika.
Yeah.
They took, you know, they take these like beautiful, incredibly powerful, meaningful things and instantaneously warp them. I just think it's a sign. If anything, it's more of a sign that the actual thing has some power to it. Which, and again, when I was listening to it, who is singing on that, by the way? Order of the Gold. Who is that?
That's my ex-wife.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've gone on to do some lovely not too many other recordings, but they're a great musician in themselves and someone to check out named Laura Darlington, if your listeners ever want to check out their work as well. They're out there on a lot of Flying Lotus Records and some other recordings.
Okay.
Well. Yeah.
Well, so that's when I'm listening and I thought, oh, they for sure mm-hmm. are in the Golden Dawn. So I have to ask, are you in that order? Because I know that order does currently exist.
The current order is, let's say it has gone a different way. It has gone less towards the practical magic and more the understanding. You'll see them with their Egyptian symbols, and they've kind of released or relinquished this idea of the Bagua and these things that was received. And maybe it was all muddled in the beginning, but just the fact that there was such a push towards mysticism in the 19th century, and then yes. they were trying to be like, no, there's a practical magic that exists, and it is made up of certain ritual and orders, and Crowley comes out of that tradition, and you know, others really did sprout from that. But I was using it very specifically both to invoke some interest and obviousness towards anyone who wants to look. Now, I love that about the mystical or hermetic traditions, that it's all there. Just yes. if you ask, if you just want in, you can be in.
Right.
And I've asked, and you know, sometimes people answer, or sometimes other things happen. But equally, I was really talking about the...
May I stop you yeah. at that moment, please? So to me, that moment that you're talking about is interesting in the sense that our expectations of getting in can only be the way we've understood getting in the past. Do you know? So when I think of getting in, I think of like, you know, getting a call where I got a job or something. Like I'm going to be on Drunk History. I'm in, man. I did it. Forgive me. I mean that. I'm it's hard for me to.
Please.
It's habit. So the getting in these things, sometimes I think the way that we are gotten in is vastly slower. Mm-hmm. Way more subtle and way more sweet
yeah.
than you're in, kid. Do you know what I'm saying?
100%. The allowing yourself, it's, you know, there is this, I think you're absolutely right. The ask, the idea that the individual has some amount of, like we have control is kind of a strange notion that we, you know, we've clung to. And obviously it's like, at least part of my American manifestation of, especially of art, right? Like I feel sometimes like I made something and like, what are you talking about? Like I just sit here and occasionally something happens. Like that's the magic trick. The idea that actually I created something novel is a ruse, is just like, and so
yes.
much the same way. I think mysticism is just such low hanging fruit, but we put up such walls to it. And a lot of it comes from our ego supposition where it's like, this is this vessel, this being is like airtight. Nothing is supposed to exit or enter with the exception of delicious things in my ears and mouth and out other parts. And, you know, just this it's very, yeah, it's this idea of like my perceived reality is the one that's happening. And of course, the shared one is much more delicious, like you're saying. And yeah.
Yes.
And absolutely. And it's subtle. And especially this idea, like, so this the kind of idea of practical magic being like so removed, right? Like, you know, this whole idea that, you know, science is indistinguishable from magic at a certain level. And we certainly have a bunch of that, but it's such a different, dirty, jagged pill than it is such a subtle, sublime, sweet thing or resonant melody or, you know, these kind of whatever kind of musical phrases we could use.
Resonant. Yes. And the sort of the disentangle, you know, the Lord of the Rings, you clearly are fascinated with Harry Potter. There's Harry Potter stuff.
I appreciate one of
your songs about muggles. Mm-hmm. You have an album that seems to be a breakdown of various unbreakable wands, mm-hmm. including narwhal tusks. Mm-hmm. And I the problem with the algorithm is it shotguns mm-hmm. tracks at you. So you're not going through the whole album, but it kept jumping back to your wand album, I realized, oh, each one of these is some kind of wand possibility. But regardless, what I'm saying is, because of our, when I'm in the early days of my thinking about magic, it was like that. It looked like that, it could look like that. But in those moments, I realized, oh my God, the magic, and you're experiencing it right now, is that I have a son, you know what I mean?
Oh, 1,000%. Like, yes, absolutely.
That's the, That's it. Yeah. Do you know? And how are you harmonizing with being a new father?
Yeah. So, and that's, and that, so this is, that's part of the, even the reason why I brought up the they themness is that I am so in tune with this life form. My partner and I are so loving this kind of aspect of bringing forth. And I have been practicing this my entire life. I realize like putting out record after record pales in comparison to bringing forth life. But there is something I've been patterning, and I never thought I would do the child thing. I never thought I'm a bit older, and it just felt like my day had passed, and the opportunity then provided itself, and it was like, oh, we're doing this. This is like, life is happening. Life is springing forth. Life is galloping. And then also that kind of like, oh wait, I don't feel parental yet. Like I don't harmonize with this, like these kind of binary roles. And so it's like, well, and where does that rest? Where does that land? And in many ways, I don't have people to point at or heroes, unlike music, where it's like, okay, this person's like, these wagon wheels have rutted in this road, and I can kind of see how music goes, how it works, and how people used to tour. But this whole year has been about, there is any idea of patterns, we're going to tabula rasa and just like brush the whole thing aside. Yes. There is, you know, there's nothing. And so it kind of made sense. Like, I don't really know what to call myself in this circumstance. I've come up with this term of being a fig rather than a father. Wow. I'm a fig. So
cool.
And so that's feeling right now, but who knows, the child's going to like have a mind and
why
be like
fig.
It's kind of like a permutation of parental figure, but it also,
oh,
our child is named Clementine, and he's, you know, going to make his own decisions, but I kind of want it to be also a fruit too, I guess. So,
you know, so cool. I love, you know, when my wife was pregnant with our first child, I got to ask Ram Dass this question about how can I be a good dad? And he got that big Ram Dass smile on his face, and he goes, dad is a role. That's a role. And son is a role. Child is a role. And he said, soul, not role.
Yeah.
And the fig is beautiful, because the trap of, I love thinking about literally in terms of a role. Like today I was just thinking, like, what if I wrote down as a character description my idea of what it means to be a father. And one thing I realized is it's all things I got from women, which is, I would be some combo Mary Poppins. You know what I mean? Like the Sound of Music. I can't remember that character's name, but you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Suddenly I realized this weird amalgam of qualities is number one. I am not going to be able to levitate with an umbrella. It's a burdensome thing. I'm crushing myself under all this like crazy mix.
Yeah.
And releasing yourself from all of that, I think, is the best thing you could do as a parent and as a protector, you know, because this is, they deserve you, not some character that you made up. You know,
oh, 1,000%. Yeah. And especially, again, kind of cycling back to being a musician, I've been practicing on stages, taking on a role and an avatar, even with an alias, right? Like, this Daedalus name isn't something I ever felt like I was hiding in. It was always aspirational to me, the figure from ancient history. But that being said, I realized at a certain point that, you know, the roles we play for others aren't serving us necessarily. They're not our saints on our shoulders. They're not our angels. They're just other manifestations and creations that people project on us, and they serve their purpose, but they just don't serve the purpose of actually, of kind of like overall fulfillment. And I know for this kid, I need to be 1,000%, or I need to be more there than I have been for many others, anyone else ever. Like, you know, the egocentric life, I can really say fully, you know, with some shame that, like, I've gone in on just, you know, music was everything in it. And
yes,
like other people would guest star, there'd be cameos, but it's, I don't know, separate art from the artist from their art is impossible. It's all a tangle.
Ooh, yeah. That's a big realization. But once you get it, you get relief, because if you get too caught up in that thing, now what do you have? You've got your family, which I guess is just something that you do when you're not doing your art. And then, how the hell is your family going to be okay with that? Because it's like, wait, what are we? We're not supposed to be your
especially when the livelihood's ebbing from that. When, you know, there's you know, things kind of the capitalism turns on those dimes. Just yeah, you got to figure stuff, but.
I don't know how. I can't balance it. I screw it up all the time. I don't know how to balance it. Sometimes I feel like this is it. Hanging out with my child. Now I feel the same feeling I have when I'm with my modular synths times a million. At last, I've moved in away from this awful hierarchy. And then before you know it, I'm like, man, I got to get back in the, I got to go make something.
Well, but this is, you know, we're patterning for our child. You're patterning for your child. I'm soon to, but equally they're have agency. We have to give them that. We have to give them release and to see your joy, your purpose, that there's something beautiful about that. Not to, you know, not to speak out of turn and to give you release. If you're feeling ashamed about it, if it's not part of your purpose,
right.
That's fine.
No, but thank you.
I've seen enough musicians just tear themselves apart, the pressure of it, being 900 feet underwater and just feeling the weight above them, both because they felt the calling and they've been ruined on those rocks, but also because, you know, they people see them, like you're constantly tattletaling on yourself for your art. Like you've picked up things that are like in titles and kind of in melodies, but I'm sure you've perceived far deeper things about myself that I would never tell a soul, but it's all there. And,
wow.
And so it's like, I want to be so available to the kid, but also recognizing that we're just patterning them up for their next bit. So trying to accept those parts and you know, it's still early days for us, but I'm really excited about just being more of that person to them than maybe some others were in my life.
Oh, same. And it gets, listen, sorry if you've heard this a million times, it just gets better and better and better until you start having these trippy, like, you know, for me, like these moments, I'm not sure about you. I mean, if I had to roll the dice, I would guess that you've had some experience with psychedelics. And when
you would roll a natural 20 if this was D&D. This is, you critted. Yeah, you critted. I can't believe you critted right there.
Yeah, so why critted? And you only just because I can't remember the song. I'm listening to your song and I'm realizing somehow he has done the thing that I thought was impossible, which is you had created this specific sound that I only hear on nitrous oxide. It's like a repetition echoey thing of three. And I'm listening like, that's that sound that I was like, what? How would we convert that to music? I don't know if you intended to do that. But regardless, all those moments, truly, and it sounds so obvious and cliche, they pale in comparison to these moments. Like sometimes I'll just look down and my child is, Forrest is holding my hand and I'm looking at him and he's looking at me and I'm thinking, This is how you end the dream of your life. This little being walks you into the next dream, the next realm. Then and it's mind-blowing moments, but it shouldn't be. You're in your car in front of the grocery store.
It's the most natural thing. You are propagating. You are, everyone sources that, or there's so much sourcing of that as being the purpose and presence. And it, you know, it sounds like you've threaded that needle and I'm excited to get on that Ferris wheel a bit more, but also to understand that it's the presence and purpose, but also to see them like see them look in the mirror and kind of have that self-recognition, one that I never could contain myself. Even if I look in the mirror and I recognize myself and I have consciousness, it doesn't mean the same thing. I'm still trapped in this, until I see them do that, I think it's nothing is really real.
You're freaking me out. I can't believe you said that because I'm driving, I'm listening to Order of the Golden Dawn as I'm thinking, what are we going to talk about? Like, how do I even talk? How do we do this?
Yeah.
And the question that popped into my head that I'm like, there's no way I'm asking them this question because they are going to think that I'm being just intentionally pseudo mystical, but now because you're mentioning mirrors, I'm asking it. If everything is a mirror, what is it reflecting?
Yeah, so there's this concept called convolution, right? Which is being able to, using the refraction or reflection of surfaces to be able to more realistically create it. And it's oftentimes invoked in music with convolution reverb, for instance, brings forth the same physical space you create. And it can be digitized. It can be like the algorithm can then bring it back to life. And everything's a mirror in sound. Everything's a reflective surface. And we experience the world not as a as mono ever, right? Everything is, even if you don't feel yourself, even if you have some change in your ability where you're only hearing with one ear, your body is a resonator. We're getting things elsewhere. And so absolutely, yes. Mirrors. So, I mean, I can be more affirmative. I can't be more affirmative. It's just one of those things where the modeling of the thing, the way we put ourselves, you know, I don't know if we can ever see ourselves. We can't hear ourselves. Certainly every time you hear a recording of yourself, you know, that uncomfortable feeling where this is not my voice, this is something else. And yes, there's a lot of science to that, but there's also that physical thing of like, we can't be our own shamanic guide, right? We can't, there needs to be other, there needs to be outside sources for us to kind of both perceive ourselves, but also just to be in this space. And something I talk to my students a lot about I don't talk to them about some of the aspects you've mentioned, but not too fast at least, but then some of the aspects, some of those parts of when you're performing, you aren't so much playing a melody or honoring the song or these things. It certainly is happening, but you were creating a smaller intimate space or a larger witnessable realm to which the sound is then procured and portrayed. And that's the trick often with performance, is like narrowing and focusing or broadening and reaching. And it sounds ambiguous in this way, but when you talk to any musician, they can really talk to you exactly how they're able to like trap that thing into that space that rests between the audience and them. And that's that corridor, that hallway is this direct, much faster than sound communication, much faster than witnessable light. And you end up, mirror neurons are all kicking off and all these things are happening, but you end up just making, you know, you're making a living room out of that concert hall, or you're making the Grand Canyon out of someone's headphones. And that so much goes back to convolution, so much goes back to reflective surfaces. And it's profound. From a sound standpoint, I don't know what it's like to see it, though. I'm not so good about the seeing thing.
Are we stuck? Is it this is when I'm thinking of everything is a mirror. Mm-hmm. Then I start thinking, well, what happened? Did we make a mistake? You know, did we stick our head in something we can't get our head out of here? Is this the situation?
I heard one of your previous guests talking about the Renaissance as being this big pivot point. And it's been presented to me before as this huge subjugation of the sight, where we were previously a much more multi-sensory, at least according to the history books, these like tomes that fall upon us from all cultures. Religion was something that was spoken, was something that was given by sound. There was no aspect to which you were ever supposed to see the Godhead. You weren't supposed to really, you know, people would describe the figures, but they would oftentimes come across in terms of the actual witnessable experience as a sound phenomena. That's how you got it. And that's how religion came. When the Orishas came to you, they came through the drum. You know, it's like that stuff.
Yes.
And so when it comes to the Renaissance and we're like, we're going to put a mustache on that dude or a beard, or we're going to just say that they're a dude, or, you know, like all these, like,
yeah,
we're going to basically start to try to trap the Godhead and also get, like, you know, forced perspective. That's the word, forced perspective. Right. And it's like, suddenly sight becomes really dominant and everything else then gets a little bit murky.
Oh, yeah.
Even though when you look at something, it's flat. You don't get dimension in sight. No. Like those who might have synesthesia out there and like those who see auras, like, good on you. But for me, you know, color combines to these flat things and it's beautiful. And I, you know, that's fine. I like paintings and all that stuff. But sound comes to you in chords. You hear the chord of it. You get the low lewd notes, you get the bass aspect of it, and then you get the high aspirational.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and so it's all happening at the same time, whereas sight tends to be this flat thing.
Wow, yeah. Oh yeah, like I see what you're saying. It's like within the fractal of music you're getting a more realistic depiction of the spectrum of consciousness than you're going to get. And yeah, I got you.
Or
that's
at least,
really beautiful.
And from the religious perspective especially, like, it makes sense that, you know, religion is this mad murky thing, and, you know, it oftentimes gets accompanied by some sort of song or dance, but it really, you know, when it comes to how you how it gets propagated and evangelized, it's usually through an image, you know, like that people raise on high and tell you to, like, that's the thing. And yeah. Sound is such a, you know, it's coming from you, coming at you from a lot of different directions, and you're experiencing it both again in, like, your bowels, like your bowels are rumbling, but your hair is fizzing, and your you know, all this extra phenomenon is happening, and it's occurring across your body, and it's just so much more that thing in my mind of what
now within is supposed to be. May I ask you this, within that packet of experience, and as I'm listening to your music, this is another thing I was thinking. Do you buy into the idea that we can, within the tracks of songs, the spirit of that moment is literally there? Do you buy into that idea that it's a some kind of medium that is holding an infinite amount of psychic energy that every time you listen to it, you release it into the world?
I would just point, for me, yes, and I would point others to think not about this is my favorite song, this is, but think more about what the act of really listening and being a listener is, and how profound that is, versus the kind of weight of you know, like what our ego says is better or worse, what we like more or less, just being a good antenna. And what the implications are for just being in vibration or being in tune or being like really feeling a part of the world and how profound psychically that is. So, yes. And, you know, all we can aspire towards in my mind is just being better listeners, being more present, being more, kind of just being able to be pushed by our environment and being affected and affecting then in turn, because, you know, every microphone is headphones, right? Every speaker is also a microphone. That's just the property of transmission, is they function both ways.
Wow. It's easy to get stuck in the microphone mode, huh?
Yeah.
Like as an artist, it's easy to get two in the microphone, and that it's my least favorite feeling, man.
Well, but I mean, it's funny you mentioned that, because one of the things I was struck by profoundly is after listening to episode on episode, you're a good listener. This wash of people, and some of them are like, you know, guest to guest, they're like sometimes saying diametrically different things, you know, maybe in opposition slightly, and you're taking it in and you're putting it through your filters, but it also able to be then a proxy to your listeners, to someone like myself. And it's quite a gift and ability, but also equally, I can tell you're hearing them out. You're hearing them, you know?
Thanks. Thank you. I try. I try not to be there at all so that I can just purely be listening and get vibrated by it. And then, I read this crazy Buddhist scripture, and it's really cool. It's like, essentially, like, what was the Buddha like, literally like? And so it's a list of all the observations regarding how he functioned. And it's an aspiration for me. And for, you know, because I love Buddhism. So an aspiration would be, boy, that'd be cool to be a Buddha. Mm. So I think most of us, we have to work from the outside in, or that's one way to do it, right? Mm. I don't know what enlightened even is, but sure as shit, if I'm there, it's not a great thing. Necessarily the best thing to happen. I'm not there, but I like to read what was an enlightened person like? And we don't have that with the stories of Jesus or Muhammad, but with this, there's a literally sentences like this. Mm-hmm. But one of the things they said is he listened when someone was speaking, he would move his whole body to look at the person, and he listened with his whole body.
Yeah.
Whoa, and listening with your body.
And this is a one of these funny connections. My parents, who are not musical people, but they did work with John Cage a little bit. John Cage, who was a Buddhist. And one of John Cage's pieces, and this is the piece that they enacted with Cage. This was in Ann Arbor some years ago. Such a strange amount of connection. But the piece was literally that you have chairs just skewed around, and then you have a speaker that plays a song. And by the end of the performance, the performer tells the audience to notice that they've all turned the chairs to face the speaker. They've all turned and faced their bodies towards, because that's, you go to a concert, or especially like DJ performances, it's the most random thing. DJs, especially in our modern DJ culture, they're just, you know, spinning records. Sometimes they are the MC of the party, so to speak. They are the person who's arbitering how you're supposed to move or kind of react to the music. But oftentimes they are lost in their turntables or their, you know, their sauce or whatever. And but audiences, no matter where you put the sound system, they will face the performer. The audience could have their back to the speakers, yeah, but they're facing this random person who's basically, wow, blowing on, you know, on dials or spinning plates, and like there's no reason to do so, but that's the human, you are, you know,
yes,
you're there with the performed. And yeah, whoa, if the Buddha did it, that's why nice, shouldn't we, you know?
We could try. I mean, yeah, but it's you know, because the concept of listening itself, you can get compressed in your head. You think listening is your ears, and so now you're listening with your head. Yeah, and yeah, then suddenly, and with music too, like when you're listening with your whole body, it's really wild to realize just how intimate you have suddenly become with someone that you might never meet. How they've ballooned around your entire identity. Now, let me ask a few more weird questions here.
Sure.
Are you a time traveler? Is Daedalus a time traveler?
It's funny. Not consciously, but I do feel so much buffeted by these like great like solar winds or waves or energy that I didn't understand and much maligned as a young person, and then subsequently like, well, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants who are standing on the shoulders of giants who are standing on the shoulder, and so forth. And it's hard not to feel that pressure wave coming from below behind. And yet at the same time, the future seems so infinitely far away. And yet I've lived long enough now to proceed through both. So absolutely not. I am just a person now and here. And yet at the same time, you play a note and that note has such incredible going for it. And I'm not saying the perceived loudness of the thing, I'm not saying the dBs of it, I'm saying the fact that you are playing in this like primordial soup of frequency, and especially how we as people are so built, like, you know, we have a part of our brain that just handles music. Like, it has a special role to play in our physiology. Our fight or flight mechanism, mostly here to save us supposedly from like danger. When you hit a bass note of certain frequencies, that same fight or flight is kicking, but it's full of excitement and exuberance. Mm-hmm. And you could, those same things that tell you to run for your life, are telling you to dance for your life. It's so confusing. And so it's like you play in that a little bit and you realize like, no, like we're, time is kind of a construct. Like, oh, this is a random fact that I adore. Before time got formalized in our like 24-hour kind of system, there was a lot of playfulness in that space. People were trying to figure it out. And there's these clocks in Japan that you can find, and you can find them elsewhere too, but these ones particularly in Japan I got a chance to witness, is the time changes according to what time of year it is. So in the winter, time gets very short. In the summer, time gets very long, because the days are shorter and it sounds cool. Like, okay, well, they're just not measuring scientifically or no, but it's experiential. It makes all the sense. And so music functions much the same way. You listen to your favorite song or you listen to an important thing, and time is irrelevant. You are in that 5 minutes, that hour passes, things happen unwitnessed. It just goes by. And then you are in an uncomfortable situation with music you don't care for. And it's grueling. Every second is like, is the metronome of your own doom occurring, and you can see the end growing nearer.
That's a Seinfeld bass line for me. That bass lick in Seinfeld slows time to a crawl, a hell crawl. If there is a hell and I'm going there, gates of hell, I know that's the first thing I'm going to hear. Seinfeld bass line.
Yeah.
I don't know why it eats me alive. But... maybe something happened to me while I was listening to it that I can't remember, but
no, it's aggressive. You hear that aggression, those thumbs, that the off pick. Yeah, no, I feel you.
The aggression of the Seinfeld baseline. It is. It's aggressive. It's spidery. It's an aggressive spider skittering out of that sitcom. Now, this is interesting. We're talking about time, because another thing I was thinking that I wanted to talk with you about was in terms of the chronology of an artist's output in the world.
Yeah.
And do you think that the algorithm that introduced me to you, thankfully, is also scrambling our ability to really understand an artist by dishing out tracks from albums that we're supposed to listen from track one to the end and not the fourth track, and then another album from 3 years before and another album, you know, 4 years later?
Well, let's look at the previous paradigms, the previous algorithms. There was one algorithm, which was the payola system, where you would only hear what the DJ was paid to play or the circumstance was allowed to give you. And oftentimes the levers of power came down to individuals with that would wield that sway in very specific ways to get their artists to win and other artists to lose. And there was people like Moondog who would play on the street, are seen as being these like, you know, incredible, gifted people. I don't want to use that G term again, but like, you know, but then would, you know, homeless and like, you know, not necessarily getting the flowers in their day, only subsequently, neither here nor there, but that payola system. And then there's you get told by your friend, your loved ones, that system where, you know, like the mouth to your ear, and how that still exists, but it's depreciated. We're all a little separated. The transmission through the digital lines get muddled, and we don't have that many systems yet to do so. And now our current paradigm, which is not in the vessel of a record, right? Like Spotify's first act, even before it's done all the things it's done, it was just erase the label from, right? No more labels, no more,
right.
Barely even a genre. We're going to make up genre terms. We're going to make up like these non-real things that just serve our purpose. And other systems are kind of similar. Like the first thing they do is just redirect our attention and kind of undo. So now Spotify doesn't even like to deal with records anymore. Now it's just a playlist. And of course, you were old enough to experience mixtapes, to have like a loved one, you know, craft and like pour over like the idea of like them and the idea of you and find musical building blocks that would somehow build bridges between the two on like on this gooey tape substance that would like kind of, you know, do something else magical, alchemical with the sound. And those formats then, I mean, like, I feel like the art of now has to be starting to take into consideration that albums don't exist and that we should be thinking in this art that is kind of beautifully going to incorporate other people's songs as part of your art just by, they're going to be put side by side. Now, we can't determine that. I'm not one to be able to determine what is to the left of me and what is to the right of me, but certainly I can be grateful for the fact that it brought you me and others, however that happened. And the fact you caught a live wire with me somehow, I'm awestruck that was even possible.
Same.
And so the, like, I kind of, going back to the Anthropocene, it's like, the album now is this construct of all of recorded history, and you just wait for your shuffle to come into focus.
Weird.
And it's kind of beautiful in some ways, but it does undo the intentionality that I had. Like I'm an album artist. I love making albums. I love telling stories and secrets and spilling and kind of putting things, like you mentioned all the Harry Potter, like I only use that because it was such a useful metaphor for people my age and younger who are, you know, the listeners. Like I am listening to myself, and other people, oftentimes the people who are involved are younger, and it's like, it's this perfect metaphor. It snuck in this back door of consciousness, all this magical talk. And of course it's like problematic in so many ways, like from the person who did it to the way that it's commercialized, but it planted a seed of like so much power and potence, and like the imagery and all these things are just like useful symbology that just have to, it's now symbols, it's now, you know, words are words, it's those things that we can utilize and kind of take elsewise, right? And so the album is undone, and we're forced to be now all swimming in this technomancy, right? It's just like playing, it's the resonant frequency of the algorithm is just a weird harsh scream of a modem, but we can kind of, do you know phone freakers? Are you familiar with this term?
You mean people who hacked phones in the old days?
Exactly.
Captain Crunch?
Sure. Totally. So there was myths and legends that you could sing the note, the combination of chords that would give you a quarter, right? like seemingly impossible, frequencies that aren't
yes.
reproducible, and yet you have people who, you know, did so. They found ways of modulating themselves to fit that vessel. In impossible, you know, like the reason why the frequencies were where they were is because they, you know, the telephone company Ma Bell was like, this is impossible, but ingenuity dictates. Yeah, exactly. We'll figure this out. We'll get there.
So two things. One, I love, to me, before we were recording, unfortunately, you mentioned being a teacher now, and I was telling you, if I was in a class and had Professor Daedalus, I would think I am in the secret society now, or I would think it is a simulation. You can't have this wonderful professor here. But two, I think you are functioning as a teacher through your music regardless, and that part of what I've been learning from you from listening to your music is that crafting of an album. And also you're just the very act of listening to more than one track from any of your albums that I've listened to so far and realizing this, that I'm seeing into a story. Like, you know what I mean? This is like halfway through some adventure he's having through via this album, or this is somewhere within a teaching in the album itself. And then seeing how you're fractalizing the album itself, that the track names, the album cover, all of it is a puzzle box of it's some beauty that you're giving us. So you already taught me that just from your artfulness related to your creation. So I think it is possible to make it, to break through the algorithm and invite people to go deeper.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I'll speak to both. I so am in awe that it exists, the possibility that that could still happen. Not to say that I still, you know, obviously make music. I still believe in the magic of it. I can't not, but sometimes it feels like the world gets so narrow, and especially not playing a show for a year, not being in the midst of that kind of easy, immediate magic of like the summoning that happens amongst a group of people all experiencing sound phenomena. It's like so evident in that. And so like this year being like all online, all away, has felt very disruptive towards these kind of continuance. So to hear that from you means the world.
Oh, thank
but
you.
As a kind of, in 2004, I released a record called Agent Agent, and I really, really, really went in on this concept of every song has like specific meaning and narrative direction, and every sample has like this alliterative nature and this metaphor, and it has like this kind of overarching spy theme, and so every sample came from like a spy place, and it was like, wow. I made a puzzle box, I made an escape room.
Yeah,
no one got it. It was totally like went over all kinds of heads, and it just wasn't like, I guess that's the thing, is I was foolish enough to think there was something gettable, and I was also naive enough to do it. And I love that I've never stopped, but also equally, there is this thing about like, well, there is a more powerful narrative than one I ever could construct. And so it's kind of good to just make way, like be artful and be a craftsperson, and you know, the artifice has place in the artwork. And there's a reason all these words use these same like Greek, you know, these Greek shared phrases or whatever, these Latin words. But it is the kind of thing of just like, gotta get out of the way more. Can't have this ego trip to think that you're responsible wholly. It's something that really, the music is only, it's not happening because of what I'm doing. It's happening between us. You got something that I could never have intended.
Yeah,
I was trying to put something forward, but it's totally that middle place between us.
Well, listen, I'm glad you did the puzzle box thing. I got that. I'm terrible at escape rooms. You never want to do an escape room with me. Let me tell you, if we're doing escape room, we ain't getting out. That's for sure. I'm not good at them. I get frustrated, and they just make me feel really dumb. What? But your music doesn't make me feel dumb. But it does inspire a sense of awe, or of like, oh wow, there's a lot going on here. And then that's exciting because I want that. We don't just listen to, no one, if you like a song, You don't listen to it once. You're not like, well, that was great. Like people, you know, or even a movie or whatever, but which is why I'm just listening to Order of the Golden Dawn over and over and like, oh yeah. Go ahead, please. Sorry.
I just want to tell you one of my core beliefs that really plays into this thing of repeat listening. I truly believe, and this there is some science that backs this up, but the listener affects the listened to.
What?
Your act of listening not only affects your memory of the song, but in some quantum level will change forever the song itself.
Whoa!
Right? It plays upstream. It moves in a certain direction. And
holy shit.
So the whole system is the whole system works together. Now, can we take a pause for a moment?
Yes.
There is
a fig duty. There, yes. You have to do some fig duty, exactly. Friend. Yeah, no problem. Let's pause. I'll pause it right now.
Okay.
This idea of listening, the listener affecting music, a song on the quantum level, has so many implications that are spinning through my mind right now. But let's talk about the first one being, what that means is that you can never, anytime you're listening to a song, you're listening to a completely new version of it that has been slightly shifted by other listeners that have just listened to it or listened to it during the life of the song.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you could think of it as being subtle, and you could think of it as being profound. Sometimes there is this like quality of something being at our edge of our experience, or like you might hear the whispers, your spirit should be listening to this. This is important, or this is terrible, or whatever. And then it comes into your life and it seems like, okay, this is the thing. But of course, it's not simply that thing that once was and now is. There's this culmination of it. And so you could look at it as being like that. There is this kind of aspect of our perceived notion of done and not done. But then the Mandela effect is constantly happening with the way we see music. And it's, you know, the Mandela effect obviously is a little bit chintzy and cheesy and wonderfully like phenomena. But music does this all the time. Things that had no effect on us, you know, the songs of our childhood suddenly are the things we want to be buried to, or, you know, things that held religious purpose and we were immune to becoming meaningful. And it can be like this as a listener, but equally we're equally buffeting our environment to be very same and similarly. So I'm an artist in resident with SETI.
Right. That was one of my questions. What does it mean?
Well, so part of that to me is that, you know, there's this phenomenology of like receiving transmission from the universe, and we're like sifting through the sands looking for aspects of life or intelligence. But in many ways, to me, the effect of this listened and listened to means that probably before we started listening to the stars, there was no aliens. The moment we started listening, we created life.
Wow.
To me, on a universal scale, if we're really scanning the skies and we're pushing back, our expectation to find means that there is. And probably, you know, like just the numbers dictate that there probably is life. There is life out there, right? Just the, you know, there's just infinite chances. But equally, I think until we started to listen, we increased our chances some factor just by looking, because that exact effect on a quantum level provides the possibility.
You are so amazing. I was just laying in bed the other night, and as I was falling asleep, I was thinking, oh my God, it's not like I need some massive radio telescope to communicate with these beings. I can do it right now. And then I thought, whoa, I don't know what if I don't wanna? Like, then, you know, that was a moment of I think this is why, to dive back into like magic, the magic symbol set, this is why we need protective circles. This is why, because I think, you know, yes, what you're saying, now I understand why you're an artist in residence at SETI. Number two, I love what you're saying because you're brave enough to say it. I get scared to say, I'm not scared to say much, but sometimes I just think, oh, people are going to think I've gone manic or something. But to me, it's like, oh yeah, for sure. If you want to communicate with aliens, it's going to be through music way before radio telescope, and that's how they're going to talk to us, and they're going to want to talk through anybody who's willing to let them talk through them. You know, like they're going to let, if you are into being one of their receivers, they're going to be delighted, I would say. I mean, right?
Yeah, I would totally agree. And I think just to circle back to the magic, you know, science, whatever you want, the first spell you always learn is protection. You always learn words first. You always, you know, figure out what the evil eye, which way it's coming from, or whatever you want to say. That's just ground rules. That's where things have to start.
It's the hand washing in magic. It's like, if you're going to do surgery, wash your hands. It's it's not a crazy idea at all, is it? It's just
I mean, there's a reason why it's built into tradition, and that, you know, it took Florence Nightingale to make it a common science practice of washing your hands. The person from the Light Brigade, which is another record of mine.
I know, yeah. And I wanted to ask you about that. What's the Light Brigade? When you say Light Brigade, what is the Light Brigade?
The Charge of the Light Brigade is a poem by, you know, Alfred Tennyson, which was all about the Crimean War, which was effectively the schism of the Russian Orthodoxy, right? Like, you have this other mystical tradition, things like Baba Yaga and the meeting. So I played some shows in the Ukraine, and it really opened me up to, so yeah, I don't want to, I am a tourist. I no matter how much I've toured, I am inevitably not going to be a person who can have lived an experience. I barely have lived an experience in this American expedition, right? Like, this is
right.
But going someplace and witnessing firsthand some of these things, and especially the way that these different traditions show up in the way people process celebration, the way that they kind of they intone their magic, so to speak, or just, you know, our present is heavy, heavy, heavy. And thusly, I went to the Ukraine and like got a big transmission of like the Eastern mystical mysticism. And again, it happened in a dark, dirty rave, but it's just as present there as it is maybe in a big hall of
Can
of
you talk about the light, them a little bit, the Light Brigade a little bit, like that them?
Yeah. So the Light Brigade was a poem again by Alfred Lord Tennyson, but it was specifically about the feudal charge of the, it was about, the Crimean War was basically one of the many Victorian expeditions. So I made these records about 3-year wars in the Victorian period. I made one about the Crimean War. I made one about the Righteous Fist of Harmony was about the Boxer Rebellion. And then I also made one, a record called The Bitter Einders, which was all about the Second Boer War. And seemingly things chosen arbitrarily, but they all have this end of empire feeling. They all have this like crumbling, which I feel a lot of kinship to with our moment. This kind of like being everywhere in the world, trying to have a voice, trying to be domineering, but speaking usually really at right angles to whatever is happening in the spiritual community, in the kind of psychic feeling, and also this kind of idea of overwhelming magic that's abundant and apparent, but also kind of doesn't function in the society like we choose. But anyway, so the Light Brigade kind of really talking about those Eastern magical traditions, but also the feudal nature of like throwing bodies at the problem. And we do that constantly.
I love that you're talking about, you're using that in terms of the Easter. That's one of the ways I've always seen them. They will definitely show up at a dirty rave, that's for sure. And
of a hut on chicken legs, it feels like, oh, this is odd. Like, we've read the Grimm's fairy tales and like obviously pulling back from way older traditions and way older kinds of magic that are just like a little foreign to our ears. But you go to a place and you see the chicken legs and you're like, oh, like, you know, this is visceral. This is happening. It just doesn't fit the format that we've, you know, it doesn't fit Cyberpunk 2077, but it's all the same thing.
Cyberpunk. Now let me ask you this. And I know we only have a little bit of time, so forgive me if I'm keeping you too long. Do you feel like it's futile? Do you have a sense that this is like, we're just, you know, I don't know, throwing sand into the ocean here or something? Like, because how is it that there is this never ending, compelling feeling that there is a deep, powerful, benevolent, beautiful, radiant magic in every single moment that is using people in any way they feel like being used to manifest into this world of darkness. Do you think it's futile? Do you think this renaissance that people keep talking about is around the bend or somewhere in between?
Absolutely, 100% not futile. Just like I said earlier, entropy is the overwhelming force. The disintegration of matter is what we're up against. And so every time we offer anything sincerely, the universe shudders. So that's our goal. That's the purpose. And why else do anything, right? Unless you're kind of gracing up against the divine.
God bless you. Thank you so much for this conversation. I'm so lucky that you are on my show. Thank you for making music. I'm sorry for this year for you and musicians.
It's needful. We needed this. We so needed to shake it up. I mean, I talk to the students all the time about this potent possibility that's going to happen where they'll be in a transformed world, but it's not just, and it's hard to speak on this directly. There won't be the same concert halls. There won't be the same opportunities. There'll be different opportunities and there'll be money to be made. But even more so, you're going to have needful people who are devoid. They've been left, you know, they've been dredged of this like easy to access spiritualism that is so abundant in your ears constantly, in your body. You have like this, you know, your bones are activated by, you know, healed by the purring of these cats that are as songs. And they've been left without, you know, touch, certainly, but sound so much. And, you know, even conversing with you for this length of time is so foreign for me. Like, I haven't had a conversation other than the babbling of my baby or my partner and the occasional Zoom call with my students. Like, it's so different. So when we get together in person, as I know we'll do at some point, Duncan, it's going to happen.
I know it.
And it, you know, and hear the graveliness of your voice, not just the kind of weird ones and zeros that we're provided with today. It's going to be really powerful and people are going to be overwhelmed. And the people talk about how once this is all done, how much harder it's going to be. And it certainly is the case. But again, the reason to be an artist is to curve the world a bit more artful. And what an opportunity to do so coming up. Like, I don't want to paint roses where there's shit or, you know, et cetera. But obviously that's the role of an artist to degrees is to kind of find those things too. Yeah.
God, please definitely promise me we get to meet in person one day.
I got to hear some of this module. So I'm a modularist too. I'm dying for this stuff. Any electricity I can put in my fingers.
I mean, to me, I drive by the Moog factory and my body just goes, oh, God, at least I'm close to it.
Yeah.
Listen, we will definitely be together in person and hopefully sooner than later. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, will you let people know where they can find you or ways they can connect with you?
The easiest way, and this is one of those funny things, when I first picked my name, I really wanted to aspire towards Daedalus, the father of Icarus. That was my intention. But I spelled it wrong. I just got it wrong / got it right. I spell it Daedelus. And that isn't to say that's wholly wrong. There's certain British spellings. And obviously the Daedalus that shows up in Ulysses and in Portrait of the Artist, Young Man, that's spelled a little bit different as well. So Daedalus is a kind of an open-ended term. But if you type in Daedelus in wherever, you know, whatever portals, hopefully it'll spit out something that I've done. And if you are inclined, shows are where I feel the most made real, but the records have something there too. And even more so, if any of that art gives you a feeling out there, those listeners or yourself, I am so interested in hearing the clap back, the slap back of that reverb is way more interesting to me. The things that, you know, your art, your sound, your resonance is way more interesting to me than hearing my songs again. So I'm also a listener, a deep and avowed listener myself.
Hare Krishna, my friend. Thank you so much. All the links you need to find them are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. Thank you, friend.
Thank you.
Much thanks to Daedalus for appearing on this episode of the DTFH. All the links you need to find Daedalus are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. Much thanks to Feels, DHM Detox, and ExpressVPN for sponsoring this episode. If you're interested in any of those products, you can find the offer codes at DuncanTrussell.com. And thank you to you for listening. I'll see you next week. with a beautiful conversation with Discordian Saint, Vermin Supreme. Don't want to wait? You can find it over at patreon.com/DTFH. I love y'all, and I'll see you next week. Bye.